Get ready to whiten those knuckles and hold fast as we talk the most dangerous, daring, and epic sea stories ever told.
Whether facing ruthless men who prey on other mariners or storms that turn calm seas into graveyards, those who go down to the sea and cast off lines enter the most challenging and dangerous environment on Earth.
Only here will you hear their stories and the lessons gained through their experience. I'm your host, Phil.
And I'm Bill.
And we welcome you aboard the Had to Go Out podcast. Before we dive into this episode, we need to provide a disclaimer. The views expressed on this podcast are those of the individuals involved and are not to be construed as official or reflecting the views of any government agency or military service. This podcast is an independent effort with no government association. The bulk of our episodes are okay for entire families to listen to, but this one touches on some mature content. Parental discretion is advised.
When the most is expected, the brave men and women of the U.S. Coast Guard are always ready. The National Coast Guard Museum will engage, educate, and inspire visitors by honoring the courage and skill of our nation's unsung armed service. The museum will explore the Coast Guard's rich history and current impact through interactive exhibits, STEM-based learning experiences, and leadership development programming. Find out how you can join the effort. Become a plank owner today. Visit CoastGuardMuseum.org/out. That's CoastGuardMuseum.org/OUT.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Had to Go Out podcast. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thanks especially to everybody that kept tuning in while we were doing those auto-published episodes while I was cruising the Caribbean. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, welcome back, everybody. Hope everybody enjoyed those auto-publish episodes we did. Thanks for tuning back in. I want to say congratulations to Phil for getting 1/1000th of his Cutterman certificate for his 3 weeks of sea time. And just say thank you again to everybody for listening. If it's your first time finding us, we're excited you found us. Please subscribe. Follow us on all the social media platforms. Tell us what you want to hear more of. Give us a review on iTunes. Obviously, 5 stars is what we're looking for. But if it's not, shoot us a direct message and let us know why it's not so we can try to fix it. And I want to thank all our sponsors again, Spotify, the Coast Guard Museum Foundation especially, and Anchor FM.
Perfect. Don't forget the Always Ready Collective, who's coming in last.
Yep. My bad.
Hey, guys, I think we got a great one for you today, and can't wait to hear her story and stories. We got a little bit of shared experience out on San Francisco Bay, so without further ado, who we have on the line? Mrs. Born and raised in Boise, Idaho, went to boot camp back in August 1979 with Recruit Company India 105. It was one of those first all-female companies. First unit out of boot camp was stationed Fort Point, which is kind of where that shared experience came in. I was at Golden Gate for a while. She did a year and a half there, which in Coast Guard terms, from my understanding of the Bay, is like a decade anywhere else, really. It's about that busy, yeah. Came out of Station Fort Point and struck storekeeper at Yerba Buena Island, and then got married, ended up at Kodiak Support Center up in Alaska. And rounded out her 5 years with the Coast Guard, went on to become a teacher back in Boise, Idaho, and is coming up on 20 years there. So with that, I'll let Bill ask Sean Lee the question.
All right, Sean Lee. So what is your most dangerous, daring, or epic sea story or stories?
I have quite a few. Fort Point was quite a blast, being a motor lifeboat station. You had many opportunities to take out the 44. A lot of times the seas were good enough out of the potato patch, which you're familiar with, Phil. It's pretty rough sometimes, but I remember one time we took out the 41. We had to go clear out to the Farallon Islands, which is quite a haul, a couple hours. And on our way out to the potato patch, the seas were doing okay until they started picking up to about about 8 foot 12, 10 foot 12, and there must have been a front coming in. So we had to turn around, go back. We were about an hour out, like I said, and go get the 44. So there's 2 hours already. The reason why we turned around is because out on the bow, when we were doing some watch, we came down a swell and saw some green water. And I had no idea what green water meant. They said, oh, we could flip. That's okay. Well, we better go back and get the 44. So we went all the way back.
What boat were you on before, Sean Lee? What was the
The 41368.
Okay, the 41. All right, yeah. Gotcha.
Which 41. Everything so, took a while to get there in the 41, as I recall. Like, everything was a long trip in that boat.
Yeah, at least we had a cabin.
Yeah.
For a short time. but when that green water, it was pretty intense green water. I mean, it was just amazing. So we went out and went back and got to 44. Went back to, of course, 44 is much slower, like a dog, but, you know, it's quite a workhorse. And, you know, coming down on that green water, that was a blast. I mean, I wanted to go out and ride the bow just to get the action of the waves, but I did for a little bit until it got rougher. Didn't realize there was a big storm coming in, and we finally got out to Fairlawns. I, for the life of me, I had no idea. It must have taken us 4 hours. And there was a 60-foot sailboat out there that was requesting help, and there was no 80-footers around that could grab it for a tow. You know, back then we were pretty short-handed on what vessels we could use. So we attempted to take in this 60-footer sailboat. They had no engine power, and the captain on their boat was pretty cooperative. And we successfully got the tow going, and of course it slowed us down. We ended up stopping.
slowed down the already slow transit back in.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, as slow as you could possibly. You know, you're doing maybe 2 knots. It was just terrible. I don't know what was going on, but because of the storm, we ended up stopping quite a bit because the captain on their sailboat, he was freaking out. So we were trying to yell at him, and his comms went down, so we couldn't talk to him very well. And so a 4 hour, 5 hour trip ended up being, we were out for almost 18 hours.
Oh, that's going into the next duty section right there. Yeah.
Well, you know, back then, you know, your motto, you go out, but you don't have to come back. That's what we were always told. And, you know, there was none of that, you know, next duty station will relieve you kind of thing. There was none of that. So we were out, and that was really my first big time of being out that long. And, you know, the bad thing about being the only female there, when you got to go to the bathroom, it kind of sucks. So they say, here's a bucket.
What time of year was it? Was it, were you in, like, hypothermia kind of gear, or were you just in, like, baseline uniforms?
We did not have hypothermia gear. We had no dry suits. All we had was a green jacket.
We're so spoiled. We're so spoiled.
I bet the air conditioning didn't work either.
Well, in 44, yeah, we had great air conditioning and a lot of good rain showers. Unfortunately, with this storm front coming in, yeah, we had nothing. I mean, yeah, Coast Guard now, to me, I call it cushy because we had no protection. You know, it was just, You ride it out, and so that's what we did. And so used the bucket and the turtle. That was, you know, they just said dump it overboard, and so I did.
Oh, and you had to go in the turtle too, like to
yes.
Yeah, for privacy. I get. Wow, man, that's brutal in some seas too.
And in a bucket in 12-foot seas. 12-foot seas, like, yeah. How much actually got in the bucket is the real.
Yeah, no ventilation. No, it was terrible.
That's terrible.
I mean, Yeah. So anyway, that really, you know, made me grow up quick. So we finally came in to a little bit calmer seas coming in through the bay and tried to do a side tow through the spring line to the captain of their sailboat. And I told him to tie it off, and he dropped the line. So dummy me, I went to grab the line between the two boats and smash the hell out of my hand. So their 60-foot boat and our 44 just kind of devoured my hand.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And he felt bad. But.
Did it break anything, or did you, what happened with the hand? Did you just come back out? I'm picturing it like all red and like beating with your heart, right? Like it swelled up three times the size.
It was, yeah. They took me to Letterman Hospital. They did an x-ray, and they said, oh, there's nothing broken.
They probably gave you some Motrin and said you were good, right?
Yeah, here you go.
Well, I think that was before Motrin. Oh. It was Tylenol, probably. Okay. But, yeah, you got to look at the years here. To this day, I still have problems with it. I tried to, on my claim with the VA, they said, no, there's nothing in there about your hand. So Letterman closed, and I don't have any medical records from Letterman at all. So I couldn't put that on my disability, but whatever.
It was funny when you said story. Leatherman, I was trying to figure out. I was like, where's Leatherman? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, but yeah,
never heard
closed.
Of it.
Yeah, you got me.
Yeah, great hospital at the time. When it was, because that was an active, the Presidio was an active Army post that was very active, as far as I know. So anyway, you know, I got light duty for the next day. The bad thing about that time, we were port and starboard duty, so we're on a day off a day, on a day off a day, and we could never be more than 20 minutes away from the station.
That limits where you live over there.
So you were literally never off, really? Like,
no. Nope. And we didn't have a choice. I lived at the station for quite a while, which caused more problems than anything else, until I finally got out of Dodge.
But what a view there, did you have a view?
Where I lived, it faced San Francisco City, so, I mean, that was okay.
Yeah.
To this day, I still fall asleep to the sound of foghorns, and I actually found Foghorns, app that has the San Francisco Bay foghorns, and that's what I fall asleep to every night.
That's classic. Cool. So, yeah, I was living in, Station Golden Gate on the second floor. I had a better view than you, I think, looking out at the city, but yeah, I feel you on the foghorns. You could definitely just, rocked in the cradle of the deep.
Yeah, I mean, those foghorns, we used to go out to Mile Rock. I don't know if Golden Gate did that. Mile Rock was a light that we had to service, and we'd have to take the 44 out there because pulling up to it was rather ferocious, and the MKs would just hop off, or, you know, our navigation people would just hop off the boat to go work on it, and we'd come back and pick them up. That was quite something.
Was it always flat?
Is there anymore.
Or was yeah, there, uh-huh. Yeah, it was always flat. Okay, yeah. So I remember Mile Rock. I don't remember like any structure on it.
Yeah, there definitely was a structure on there at the time.
That's funny. I was always told like helicopters landed on it to service it. That's what. Yeah, I don't know. That's funny.
Yeah. No, we were the ones. Group. Well, when it was group before sector, group always had us going out with 44. So that was quite fun. But I mean, it's really a. It was a grow-up time. You know, for a 19, 20-year-old kid coming out of little Boise, Idaho at the time, it was quite an awakening. Very naive for being, as far as I know, the first female at the station, and the only one there during my time for quite a while, which was really hard on me. I remember when I joined the Coast Guard out of Boise, I'm saying, okay, tuition is going up at the college where I'm going to, went up to $300 a semester. I couldn't afford it anymore. I'm thinking, what do I want to do with my life? So I went down to the recruiter's office, and I saw the Coast Guard. Man, I love the color of the uniforms. So I joined the Coast Guard just because of the color of the uniforms. I still like blue.
The blue uniforms? Like the working?
Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
Right. I couldn't swim with a hoot, so boot camp. You know, they're hitting me on the top of the head when we were doing swim tests with a big old long stick, and I started hyperventilating. They passed me.
How was it with a full female recruit company? You know, did you guys have female company commanders, or were they male? How did that go?
Chief York, he was a bosun.
Awesome. You still remember his name?
Oh yeah, he in fact. Back then, we didn't have tennis shoes. We had to run everywhere in boondockers. And you have a green belt, so once you earn your blue belt, you don't have to run everywhere. That's like the first 6 weeks. But he did give you a break if you were a smoker. So if you didn't smoke, you could learn to smoke, and everybody who smoked could go outside and have a smoke break at the bottom of the squad bay. And those of us who did not smoke, like me, we had to clean. So it was like, okay.
And you never took it up, huh?
No.
Nope.
Nope, didn't want to. But, yeah, we cleaned a lot. He would come in while, you know, we're in the showers. I mean, he just came in. He would kind of announce himself sometimes, but he just came in and, you know, we quickly got towels, and I know it's a lot different now.
Yeah, oh,
for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Somebody would definitely lose a job, you know, real quick over that now.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I'm saying, you know, it kind of woke me up. Fort Point, being the first female or only female there at the time, the guys were not ready for that, and I knew about it. They told me about it all the time. It took me 3 months to finally get on a boat crew, and I was cleaning the whole time. They were purposely, after I cleaned, they were purposely messed something up, so I'd have to clean it again. They were just rather nasty to me, and when I lived there, found out the showers, the bathroom for the female head, the lock, they fixed it so the lock wouldn't lock, and they would come in and, like, pull open the shower curtains, and where my birthing was, the closet, they had put holes in through the wall so they could see me undress. It was just bad. I don't know. They just thought I was there as a female, not as a fellow crew member. So it was pretty bad. And there was a second-class MK that came into the station drunk and wouldn't leave me alone. He sexually harassed me. Had him court-martialed. It might have been a captain's mess. I keep forgetting. Anyway, he was busted in a rank and moved.
I'm glad they at least held somebody accountable. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you know, I hate to hear that it was a bad experience, but I am glad to hear that, like, at least there was some kind of fallout for,
right.
You know.
For him, right. There was other stuff. There was a second-class bosun that I didn't know he was married. And we were just friends. We never really hung out except at the station. And I remember waking up sometimes, you know, being out for 15, you know, hours at a time. It was just grueling. It was exhausting. And I fell asleep on the couch and woke up and his hands were down my pants. I said, oh, my God. And I talked to him about it and told him that is something you don't do. He says, well, if you tell somebody about it, I'm going to kick you off the boat crew and you're just going to be cleaning the station and I'm going to tell everybody that you're sleeping with everybody. You know, just turn the whole thing around when I wasn't doing anything. And I kind of let it slide. I didn't talk to anybody about it. I never even saw our chief or OIC because he was always in his office. He never went out on calls or anything. And so I was a little intimidated by him. And this bosun, he was my ride to work. And he said, well, we're not going to work today. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I made sure you and I got it both off. I said, okay, but I didn't know about it. He drove my car and me 100 miles away up towards the mountains and got a hotel room. And I said, I want to go back. And he wouldn't let me go back. He wouldn't give me my keys. And he tried to molest me. And I somehow I ended up in the bathroom. I locked myself in there till the morning. And when I came out in the morning, he said, okay, let's go back to work. So I got lucky that I never said anything. I remember the guy's name. And often, you know, I talked to other crew members that were there. And they said, well, we had no idea. I said, I was scared. I hid out on the roof hiding from him one time. And a couple years ago, I went to Fort Point and gave a tour to the Fairlawn Sanctuary people that are working there now. And I said, yeah, that's the roof I hung out on. Climbed out the window and hung out there so I wouldn't be found. It was this very, very scary time. You know, it still haunts me to this day. And because of that, picking up all the jumpers from the bridge, we had about 20 in the year and a half I was there. I've suffered from PTSD. I finally understand why I do the things that I do or why I feel the way I do because of all that, and never put two and two together. Back then, we didn't have any counseling. We had counseling for nothing. So it's just you're expected to do it, and you do it. So I kept my mouth shut and went on my merry way.
Yeah, Sean Lee, it's a lot to take in. I think that's why, like, we're kind of silent.
Yeah,
you know,
I don't think we have anything intelligent to add there. That's, wow.
It is, you know, the jumpers, you know, like I said, coming from a little town here, not really having real life experience, and then being, you know, going right into that kind of situation, you know, it really makes you grow up fast. And my license plate has Fort Point written on it. Not that I'm remembering Fort Point because of the male influences that, you know, what they tried to do over me, but because it made me grow up. The jumpers watching, or because the station that we were in was built in 1896, and it was very old, watching the jumpers from the tower. You could see them jump from the bridge. I mean, that was the awakening, and a lot of the how we had to pick up the bodies and what the guys made me do to earn my right on boat crew, and how I had to pick up bodies by myself. It was very unfair, but again, I didn't say anything in fear of, you know, losing my job on that boat crew, which I earned. Putting the stokes in the water, make sure you have a blanket, you know, because nothing seeps through. It was just gross. And doing it by myself, I about fell in several times. They finally started helping me, but I went through hell. And without counseling, I mean, I don't know how I did it, truthfully. I know there's counseling now. I mean, the one lady that we had to pull off the rail around the tower, put her halfway up, and, you know, like I told Phil yesterday, the baby we found in the suitcase. I don't know how I did it. I mean, it bothers me, but I don't know how I did it. I'm hoping now that there's a lot better counseling coverage for cases like that. I'm assuming.
Yeah, I knew. I mean, I know. So I guess I could give you, like, you know, from over a decade ago, right, when I was there. I think some things might never change. You know, that earning the spot on the boat crew. Unfortunately, I guess, you know, when I was there, it was kind of the same way. There were a few things that they would force you or, you know, have you do to earn your spot on it. So I know what you're talking about there for sure.
Well, you know, at least that one wasn't gender specific.
Nope,
with
for
all
sure.
The other stuff she had to
yeah,
deal
no,
with.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I'm not no excuses for any of that stuff.
Right.
But I definitely know, you know, for a fact, you're, you know, that for sure happens,
right.
Or did happen at least. But yeah, I mean, SISM's huge, and I could say, Sean Lee, you know, with you not having access to any of those things, and at the time when I was there, when it started with SISM and some of these counseling sessions, at the time I'm thinking, like, how stupid this is, right? Because again, like, you know, we're all 19,
yeah.
20 year old people, right? And we're just kind of
right.
Kind of
yeah.
going with it. But no, I see the benefit to it now, especially when you talk to younger people about how to deal with that kind of stuff. So I could 100% see how hard that would have been, you know, been out on an island almost, right? Not having anybody
yeah.
to have that shared experience. Because I'm sure everybody's thinking the same thing, just some aren't communicating it.
Right. Well, I think the other difference that why it maybe was even worse for you to deal with is being the only female there. I'm sure that the guys came back and, you know, they talked about it somehow. It might not have been the way you would expect a counselor to talk to you about it, but they at least had each other to talk to, and it sounds like you didn't really have anybody you could rely on while you were there.
I didn't have anybody.
Right.
I mean, you know, it was funny for them to see how the things that they put me through. I remember to get on boat crew, they wanted me to do a swim test out to one of our buoys about 50 yards and back in a Gumby suit, which, you know, we didn't even use those in boot camp. And
they're not
definitely
made to
not
swim
like
in.
What they have right now.
Yeah, they're not made to swim in.
No. So I it was an extra large, and I was like 118 pounds at the time, and I put it on, and I sank. And I, because it was so heavy, I couldn't get back to the surface. And I looked up, and I saw them staring at me on the bank, or whatever you call it, the catwalk, not catwalk, anyway, going down to the boat, where we would walk down or run down. They were just standing there staring at me, laughing at me, while I'm struggling to come to the surface. And they thought that was the funniest thing. I think one of the MKs, who was a really nice guy, he came in and grabbed me. But they never got in trouble. I mean, it was just, you know, hey, here's a female. We can have fun with her. And there's another female that was there about a year after I left. And she would come back from a case, and they hung out all her underwear on the trees. And that's how they treated her. I mean, it was the same exact thing. Maybe a few different people, but, you know, it didn't change. And she's struggling big time with this now, and I'm trying to help her get some help. It's just not right. You know, I'm just fed up with this Me Too thing. It got me going on what can I do to help myself? And I wish I would have done this years ago, but, you know, I'm getting there.
No, that's I'm glad to hear that you're helping others through it. You know, and I think we all, you know, everybody listening, I'm sure, like, hates everything that you just said, right? I mean, we all, like, I guess I like to have faith in people now that hopefully things are better for people. If they're not, I hope they're reaching out and finding the resources and the people to put a stop to it, you know? But yeah, I guaranteed everybody, you know, everybody that's in right now, at least from my standpoint anyway, is, you know, disgusted at what you just told
Yeah, us. I mean, I'm sitting here listening, and I've been doing this for 15 years, so a little while, but at the same time, a long time after you, and, like, I can't even imagine it being like that. It just wouldn't happen.
Right, I think that's why I'm so silent. Like, right. I don't even know what to say.
Yeah,
like, yeah.
I mean, obviously, like, you know, it's you hear stories, but to talk to somebody who actually experienced it, it's brutal.
Well, you know, when I came in, you know, they had only allowed women in all the rates just a couple of years prior, and I was offered a ship out of Hawaii, and I turned it down. I'm kind of glad I did, because I know they had a lot of issues with females and trying to find them birthing and stuff like that, and the harassment was huge. I would do it all over again. I mean, at my age now, I'm definitely a lot wiser, but there's, you know, unfortunately, I did strike to become a storekeeper after we found the suitcase in the bay with the baby, and that in itself, the Coast Guard's changed so much because we were transportation department back then, and where I was striking at the supply center at Yerba Buena, a lot of the guys were in the back smoking pot all day long. The CO and the chief would go upstairs, they'd be gambling. It's just, wow, this is totally different than what I just came from, and if this was a more lack. I mean, I don't know if there was just not a chain of command thing that was going on. I really don't know. I'm glad to see things have changed.
I don't know. I feel like that's what the SKs do now too. I can't prove it.
Hey, good rate.
What's
it was all right. You know?
I hate to comment on, like, you know, to ever say things are better, because I don't know, right? I mean, I'm not in that same world that females are. I mean, you know, as far as, like,
Phil,
you know,
and I definitely fall in a demographic group that's not typically the target of harassment.
Right. I can't comment intelligently other than to say, like, you know, I've seen a ton of people step up and you know, call out stuff like that, and you know, make sure people are held accountable for when they do it. So, you know, I hope that people like you that come out and tell their story and are able to, you know, kind of shed some light on at least the way it used to be. I hope the way that it just used to be, right? And isn't even today, doesn't even hold a candle, hopefully, to it. But, you know, I'm disgusted, like, hearing it. I don't know how else to put it.
Yeah, I think that's the right word.
Yeah. We've got a lot more of this episode to go, and we'll get right back to it after this short ad from our sponsor. We're going to give you a key number about the future National Coast Guard Museum, and that number is 5.
There are 5 themed storylines: lifesavers around the globe, enforcers on the seas, defenders of our nation, champions of commerce, and protectors of the environment.
The exhibits and galleries in those storylines will be showcased in a 5-story museum.
And here's our favorite 5. For as little as $5 a month, you can be a plank owner and support construction of the National Coast Guard Museum.
For details on how you can get involved, go to coastguardmuseum.org/out. That's coastguardmuseum.org/OUT.
You know, I think it's gotten better. I think the sexual harassment is still there. That's going to be an ongoing thing. I know when I went in, you know, even my own family thought, well, you're going to be a tramp, you know. Okay, that didn't happen, obviously. And that mindset has just got to change, and it's got to come from the top down. And until that changes, women are still going to struggle with this. But like what I did, you know, I overcame, and I proved that I could do the job. My original goal was to be a bosun, and my papers put in to do that. And one of the guys at the station misplaced my papers, so I never got to go to school. So it was, they were thinking, you know, it's not something that a female should do, kind of thing. So I, unfortunately, I was at the wrong place at the wrong time. But I, like, again, I would do it in a heartbeat.
Well, you know,
my knees couldn't handle it.
It's, yeah. We, that's the second time I've heard that from a female who was in the either late 70s or early 80s, that their A school request somehow got misplaced, quote unquote.
Yeah.
So yep. that must have been a pretty common thing back in the day.
I think it was. You know, they wanted you to do a desk job, so that's what I ended up doing. It wasn't my choice. But, you know, I think the Coast Guard under Homeland Security is a lot better. It's a lot safer. You know, they've changed that mindset of, you know, you do have to come back. We want you to come back, you know, with TCT and all that stuff, which is great. But I look at what I went through, you know, these long SAR cases, and riding the waves, and I've had 7 knee surgeries. I'm going to have a knee replacement, and it's all, you know, from these boats. And that was a very, very, very busy station, as you know, Phil, from Golden Gate. I would do it again. But I would definitely have a dry suit. That would be awesome.
Well, it's, you know, I mean, maybe the one, you know, a little bit of comfort you could have in that is that, like, you definitely laid the groundwork, because I can tell you, you know, Golden Gate, I had a ton of shipmates that were female and that were, you know, as good, if not better, in most cases on, you know, whatever we were doing, right? And they were just members of the crew. I don't even,
right?
You know, even to call them female now, they were just members of the crew. I don't know, there wasn't a,
yeah,
you know, you just didn't make that distinction, really. It was like, hey, we're all on a boat crew, we're in this together, let's go get the job
right.
Done.
Well, go ahead. I was going to say, I will say, you talked about how hard it was if you had to go to the bathroom. Imagine add a dry suit into that. That's hard for everybody.
Well, I was actually, I've seen that happen, right? I mean, right. You know, not watching it, right? But, like, knew how the mechanics worked.
Right.
Yeah, that's the dry suit restroom issue for a female can be, wow.
It's a process, to say the least.
Yeah, I do not envy them whatsoever. It's basically just a matter of hanging over the side of the boat, really. It's like
working. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, even, you know, not having a dry suit and being on the 44 as much as we were, and, you know, not the best of weather out there most of the time. You're soaked, you're wearing your boondockers, you know, and short little boots, and nothing kept you warm. And the only time I ever put a helmet on and attached myself with a harness system to the cage was when we went out and played the surf for Coast Guard Day. Had some great pictures of that. But, you know, you look up and all you see is water. I mean, I thought we were flipping over, and that was fun. But no dry suits. I mean,
no dry
suits. So I feel like an old salt. I really feel like an old salt, you know.
That's some salty stuff. It really is.
Well, and when you mentioned, you know, the stigma on females, I remember 4th of July, we took the 41 out behind Angel Island. There was some partying going on over there. And when we came around the cove, there was all these boats that had females dancing on the boats, which is fine, but they were naked. And so the guys had me take our boat hook, and every time we came by a boat that had a naked female, they wanted me to tap her shoulder as a gentle reminder to put her clothes on. We stayed, missed and stayed out there for 3 or 4 hours. Come on, you guys. I'm tired of doing this. My arm was getting really tired. There was probably over 100 boats out there, and we went to every single one, and those guys had a blast. Oh, my gosh. Just get me back. It was kind of crap that went on.
I'm trying to think of, like, the San Francisco. Yeah, it's not like that either. Yeah, yeah, well, I haven't seen that.
You know, that's the end of the free love era, really,
yeah,
at
yeah,
that
that's
point.
True, yeah, 79, right? Yeah, yeah, 80.
Yeah, I mean, we had a run-in with the Mafia in Sausalito. We had a shootout with them. We had a 41 over there, and we caught them doing some drug smuggling, and had a little shootout with them right there on the dock. That was kind of fun.
Tell us more about
that.
Yeah,
I want to hear about this. Let's talk about this story.
Sounds epic.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I have all these, like, repressed memories, and you start talking to me, and say, oh, yeah, that happened, too. Yeah, so we caught them. We got a tip that they were doing some drug smuggling, and we found the boat and attempted to pull the boat over, and they were pulling out these big old guns, and so we pulled out ours, and they shot at us, and I don't think we shot back. We pulled out and called for some extra reinforcements. And by the time they came from group, I mean, it was another 15 minutes or so. The guys were gone. It was like a dead boat. But we didn't have any police help. Nobody got hurt. But it was rather hilarious when the cops said, yeah, go down below and go find all the guns you can find. I'm not sure what's down there. And we found a 45.
Oh, man, things have definitely changed.
Go find all
go find the guns. I don't know what's there.
Yeah. He said, let's just show them our guns and show them what we have. And, of course, they held up where we did. So I think they ended up, we kind of lost them.
Yeah. You're probably better off in the long run.
Well, I think we called it in. One of the cutters ended up finding them. I'm not like what, you know, was going on today. We didn't have that kind of stuff, you know, like finding these mini subs and stuff like that. That was pretty awesome. But
yeah,
that was definitely something to remember. That was kind of fun, actually. My goal was law enforcement. You know, I wanted to do that, and that was really my only time. But I didn't get the chance to engage. So.
Was the anchorage still over there in Richardson Bay? Did people live over there back then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Was that, I mean, did you ever have any weird cases over there? Because I always felt like that was like, if you wanted to get weird today, we're going to go to Richardson Bay.
So that's where to find the meth, that kind of place?
It's just weird, man. Yeah. You never know. Yeah, there's always something.
No, not at that time. I mean, there weren't even really windsurfers out at the bay. We never went to Richardson. We'd go down to... down towards Bodega Bay once in a while, head that way up to Point Reyes. We didn't really have a lot of, oh, my dog is working. We didn't have a whole lot of weird stuff going on, actually.
I hated that ride to Richardson Bay or to Point Reyes, because there's nothing up there. It was just the most empty coastline ever.
Yeah, I've been to Point Reyes on the shore side, and there's nothing there.
There's nothing there. Until you hit there's a life-saving
station.
Nothing. Right. Yeah, that's it. Like that old life-saving station. Was that active back then, or was that... That was probably pre...
It was.
Was it? Yeah.
And there was a lighthouse up there that one... The guy that kind of basically kidnapped me, he ended up attending the lighthouse. It was just him. He stayed there the whole time. So, I mean, there was...
It sounds like a perfect job for a predator.
Yeah, there you go. Go ahead.
Yeah.
The lighthouse. Yeah.
I still would like to find him and just give him a piece of my mind, but I won't. Then I ended up at Kodiak, Alaska, and that was a big change because that was by the book up there, and that was it was refreshing, you might say.
And you were on where were you at in Kodiak? Like, was it just you said the support center, so what other units were up there when you were there?
The Monroe, I don't remember what other cutters, I was in the supply part, so we did, teletype orders, and all of our orders, that was before computers, all of our orders went out to a teletype, and they had me, because I did some interning down here with the sheriff's department for a while, so because my prior law enforcement background, they had me going out on some, well, it was more like an inventory. We had a C-130 crash into a mountain down there, and it killed everybody.
Oh, wow.
And so I had to go inventory everything that was on the plane. It was very isolated station. It was the kind of place that, I mean, I think it's a lot better now, but, you know, World War II housing or birthing was pretty bad. I had my best friend kill himself. I had to deal with that. I mean, it was just, a lot up there. It was just a different circumstance, you know. You only had so much of the road before you ran out of the road, and only one way off, you know, well, two-way boat or airplane, and it was very isolated, but it was refreshing, very refreshing. I'd go back there, too, except for the bears.
Except for the bears.
Yeah, they're big.
Well, we had a guy on a few weeks ago who, had been on the PD up there, the Coast Guard PD on that base, and he said, like, you'd drive around, and the guys would just be like, oh, yeah, there's a bear over there. He said, and I thought it was a car, that it was, like, sleeping in a parking place. And he was like, I thought there was a car, and then the car got up and shook, and it was a furry car.
Yeah.
Time to go.
We went camping one time, and they destroyed our camp when we came back from fishing. But, man, if you've never seen a Kodiak bear, oh, my gosh, they're huge.
At least they were at your camp while you weren't there.
Yeah, exactly. They will bring you back to reality really quick.
Right.
But I got out from there. I would have stayed in if it hadn't been for the boss that I had at the time. He was a warrant officer, and he was just I don't know. He wasn't there to help anybody. He was just in it for himself, and I was trying to get my second class, and he was just being an idiot, and I was just kind of done with fighting the female problems, which I said it was better up there, but he was in that mindset. You know, he was better than the females had working for him and treated the guys better. So I was just done. I was just tired of messing with it all.
Well, Sean Lee, I want to take it back real fast to back to Golden Gate, because I, you know, as much tragedy I think as people see there, right? And you said that you still struggle with it. Let's talk about it. You said that you know, it was helping to talk about it. What you know, tell me about Jumpers of the early 80s. What you know, how did you guys get the call? I know you said you saw them. Like, did you guys see each one and observe them and go? Did they drop a flare? How did that go down?
Back then, they didn't have the net under the bridge. And
I guess Sean Lee, we should also preface, like, we're talking about suicides from the Golden Gate Bridge, which is a massive suicide spot. So anybody, sorry if we didn't, like, clarify that.
Like I said, back then, they didn't have the net under the bridge. But usually whoever was on duty would be notified by group, or we would see them. Because we were only about a quarter mile away, and see them standing with our, you know, binoculars. I remember watching a couple of guys just die down. We had a guy just lost his job, and we find out about him, you know, from the family members, because they end up showing up at the station. And you know, when you pick up a body that's fallen 300 plus feet or whatever it is, you know, they get very bloated. Usually break in the back, whatever. We had one guy who landed straight on his back, and oh my gosh, he was the hardest thing to pick up. We had a crane to pick up the Stokes. But it was, you know, you see that for the first time. You call out a Max Pro, and you get the boat over there real quick, and we never could get there in time. But the one time we did, the generals of the Presidio, his son jumped to see if he could do it. And he made it. He went in feet first, and he was arrested as soon as he got back to station.
Yeah, that's it right there.
Yeah, we were known as the Body Snatcher Station, which they didn't want that to be known as a public thing. We had a patch that had body snatchers on it. We kept a body snatch count. There's a piece of wood that we would draw in the bodies, and That, as far as I know, went back to the 50s. I don't know exactly when that started, but I remember seeing, like, 1953, 54, all the way up through the time I was there. And so that's what we did. You know, we always kept track of how many bodies. And it was a very long board. It was down by the 40, where the 41 board. And we just kept adding to it. And so we had that mindset. We were the body snatchers. Everybody knew it. And that was our job, other than all the SAR we did. But, you know, there's just... so many bodies, so many dead people for a 19-year-old, 20-year-old kid. Again, and, you know, the lady that jumped somehow who didn't make it, I don't know if a gust of wind got her or something, but she got wound up on the rail, and having to pull her off, I can't believe that I didn't lose it. I knew I had a job to do, but, you know, I think of PTSD now as someone who has been in active combat, you know, in the Army. You know, I know a lot of guys, my son-in-law is in the Army. And people don't realize Coast Guard. It was my other pet peeve. Coast Guard is part of the military, you know, and I do advocate for that as much as I possibly can. But they don't realize that what we went through, these small boat stations, and how many, you know, dead bodies and death we had to deal with. And all these years of wondering why I get so upset over certain little things, or I'm very much an advocate for kids, you know, with the baby in the suitcase on one of my last stars, I finally put two and two together, and I said, I need to get some help. And the bad thing is I can't coordinate counseling with my work schedule, so I haven't been able to work on my PTSD. But it's recognized. It's something I understand now. I just wish it didn't take me so long to have to figure it out, you know?
For sure. And I'm listening to your story, and I'm right there with you. I've seen it. I've seen, from 1980, right? Think all the way up to 2001 to 2008 or so. We still had guys coming to the station who had been there before that, were struggling and just wanted to talk and just say, hey, how's the station going? Like, is this still happening? And you'd be like, yeah, it's pretty much every day. And like you said, the thing that really gets me is you know the victims, right? Like, eventually the coroner comes over and maybe you search their pockets or something at the time. I don't know if they still do, but, you'd find the suicide note. You'd find the cash. You'd find the drugs, whatever it was. Note from the spouse.
Right.
All that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, the picture could become clear real fast. And then maybe even, too, like what people did to their own bodies, right? Like, I've seen a couple of ladies that jumped off that would, mark up on their bodies what they didn't like. Like almost like a plastic surgery.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. That's So all the way back to 53, that's been going on. That's unbelievable. But yeah.
It's
crazy.
I like I said, I know things have gotten somewhat better. I think back to it. I'm sure I will have more that will pop up. When we underway and we would tell the group, they're asking what kind of seas do we have? And we would always say a facey, flat ass calm. Then you've got the 60-foot blue whale right next to you. I said, man, this is worth it. And then you get a call to go pick up a jumper. And I remember that to this day. And it's kind of ironic because we were next to a 60-foot blue whale. I think we're coming back from Farallon's. And then we get a call to go pick up a jumper. And then 2 days later, we had to take a dead whale that had come into the bay. We had to drag it back out to the ocean. Hopefully, it wasn't a 60-foot whale. But it was just kind of ironic that the amount of life and death that you have around that bridge and what it brings to people. And I know they still have issues with it. Yerba Buena, when I was there, they had some suicides. But I don't know. I try to wrap myself around when people talk about their PTSD, it's way different than what I went through. I wasn't shooting anybody. I wasn't killing anybody, but I had to deal with the aftermath, kind of like what a medic would have to do in the Army, I guess, or something. But if PTSD is PTSD.
Yeah.
And
traumatic stress is traumatic stress, regardless of how you got
there. Yep.
Yeah, and the people wear so many hats, right? Like, right. I mean, you're talking police, fire, military, just, whatever the flavor of the day is, whoever called it in. So, yeah, I mean, I think shared experience over a lot of communities, not just the military, but, like EMS, police, fire, all those guys. Everybody experiences that kind of stuff for sure.
And when I did go in, just that mindset of, women didn't normally do this kind of thing, what's the Coast Guard, and, funny how I chose the Coast Guard, but I have my name in the Women's Veterans Memorial at Arlington there in D.C. I was proud to do that in my story. I'm proud to represent what I did in spite of all the hell I went through. I did do Coast Guard Auxiliary for a while, and that was okay, but like I said, I would do it in a heartbeat. I mean, if my poor knees would let me, but I'm kind of too old now. I'm way too old, but I was very proud to do what I did, and in spite of, what I went through, it was a good learning experience.
And Sean Lee, what's the memorial you talked about? I'm familiar with it.
You're not familiar with that one
either. At the beginning of Arlington Cemetery in D.C., there's a Women's Veterans Memorial. And it's a nonprofit for some reason. It's not funded by Congress. It's a nonprofit that we've been trying to raise money for. And when it was first established, I think back in 97, they were trying to get as many women to tell their story. So they have a website, and I submitted my story. And it's, so if you ever go in there, you look up my name and you'll find my story. And it's women, a lot of women that have just basically told, their life in the military, and they're still trying to get funding for it. There was a chance of it closing, I think, because of lack of funding, but I think it's going pretty good now. But it's a bit at the entrance of Arlington. So we need to get the word out on that.
Yeah, there you go. I think that's, do you know the name of it? What's the name?
It's just, I believe it's just called the Women's Veterans Memorial at Arlington National Cemetery.
Perfect. Bill and I will look it up and we'll attach it to this episode for sure.
Yeah, that's a great source. I'm trying to get every woman, regardless of military branch, to tell their story.
Excellent.
So there's not that many Coasties that are in there. I don't think there's that many.
Surprise, surprise. Yeah, huh? Yeah, surprise.
Yeah.
Hey, that's what makes us better, is there's not that many of us.
That's what it is. Yeah,
we're
an elite few, really. Yeah. I got you.
It's the 5%, right? Have you heard that?
Is it 5 or 3? I don't know. I look at the T-shirt.
I heard it was 5%, but when I went in, it was Department of Transportation. It was so different, you know. So I think that's why a lot of people don't think it's military, which just irks me, you know. Yes, I have a 214. Thank you very much. I get a disability check every month from the VA. Thank you very much.
So I kind of want to go back to the Treasury.
Yeah.
I think when you're a Treasury, you got teeth when you're with the Treasury.
Right.
It seems like, I don't know. Yeah. DHS is cool, but the Treasury's got teeth. Deal with money like you know people are going to listen.
It was Treasury for a long time.
Right?
Definitely. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's Homeland Security, but Treasury was, it was quite interesting. I just don't think it was as regulated as it is now.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, I mean, that was decades ago, too.
I think even the regular military, like when I say regular, the DOD military, I think in the last 40 years has gotten way more professionalized even than it was in the 50s and 60s. You know, as we've gone to the all-volunteer force, which, of course, the Coast Guard pretty much was anyway. We didn't have a lot of draftees. But as we've gone to, like, an all-volunteer force and a lot more people making a career of it, I think even what the U.S., the DOD military is way different than it was in the 40s, 50s, or prior to that.
Oh, yeah. I love the history going back, you know, with the Taney in Pearl Harbor and Coast Guard making, I think I read the other day, making the capturing a German submarine and the first German POWs Coast Guard captured. You know, little stuff that you don't hear, you know, that people keep saying, who's the Coast Guard? What's the Coast Guard? You know,
right.
It's okay, whatever. I will inform you.
I've got you. I love it, Sean Lee. That's good. Well, hey, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you go to Walmart and they have the flags up, but they don't have the Coast Guard. They don't have the ensign. So I go talk to the manager. Anyway, go ahead.
I know. I always like when they play Semper Paratus at the baseball games. There's like three people standing up. You know what I mean? They can recite the words. Do you know the words of Semper Paratus, Sean Lee?
I'm not going to sing it for you. But
no, that's you don't have to sing it. I was just asking you the words.
We'll accept
a
yes or no.
Yeah, just yes or no is good.
yes, I do. I know.
Perfect.
I know most of it.
All right. Well, as long as you can stand up and sing the chorus anyway, we're good to go.
Like I said, I'm usually the only one standing. So I always pick it up. I know it's coming.
If nothing, you can kind of hum it, and it still sounds pretty close, right?
yeah, for sure.
Well, hey, Sean Lee, we so much appreciate you sharing our story. And, you know, I, for one, want to thank you for your service and, you know, for laying the groundwork for a lot of females that came after you. So, you know, I hate that you had some bad experiences, but, you know, I like to think that a lot of people have learned from them and have built something much better now.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that. And I appreciate you reaching out to me. Like I said, I'm a very proud vet. I'm a very proud Coastie, and I enjoy telling my story. It's definitely helped me throughout the years.
Well, great. Thank you very much for your time today. And yeah, to echo what Phil said, thanks for your service, and thanks for being a pioneer. And kind of definitely, I think, unfortunately, for what you had to go through, it did help pave the way for hopefully people have a better experience now.
Well, I definitely hope so. You know, especially going through boot camp, and I'm glad they get tennis shoes. It's something I'll always remember.
You actually get yelled
at
now for running in if you're wearing your boots and you run. You actually get yelled at. Yeah.
Yeah, I should go to Cape May and tell them a few of my stories, but they probably don't want to hear from me. But no, I really appreciate you guys, and thanks for letting me get my story out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll say, you know, anybody out there that's active duty now, reserve, whatever, auxiliary, that's suffering, you know, might be suffering some kind of similar thing, speak out, because people will stand up and they'll make it right. I can guarantee that. If you talk to one and they don't, talk to somebody else until it gets resolved.
I totally agree on that.
Yeah, and we'll have Sean Lee tagged in this thing, so if you want to reach out to her, please do. Same with the Women's Memorial out at Arlington. And thank you guys all for listening. Thanks again, Sean Lee.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Before we end this, we want to give a plug for some people and organizations that we believe in.
The Coast Guard Foundation supports the brave men and women of the Coast Guard when they need it the most, providing everything from financial aid to families in crisis to scholarships and playground equipment. As a nonprofit 501c3 charity, they count on our donations to deliver this support. Visit CoastGuardFoundation.org. That's CoastGuardFoundation.org to read about their programs and donate what you can to support those who guard our nation's coast.
Another one to check out is the Always Ready Collective, which delivers art by and for some daring fighters of the sea. Head over to Etsy, Facebook, or Instagram and search Always Ready Collective to check out their Coast Guard and Maritime-focused tattoo flash, pinups, and propaganda. You won't be disappointed. Anyone who gets one of their designs inked on their body will get featured on their feed and can be sent a care package on the house. Find a design you like, some blank canvas, and get it done. Thanks for taking the time to listen.
If you like what this podcast is about and what we delivered, look us up at theyhadtogooout.com or your favorite podcast platform. And like, comment, subscribe, and share so we can keep the momentum up and do bigger things going forward.
Look for a new episode every Sunday. Until then, fair winds and following seas.